Hi, and welcome to the introductory episode of Textures. I thought it would be nice for the audience to know a little about me and the mission for this podcast. So I asked Margaret Cruz, associate designer at VLA and good friends, to sit down and chat about how all this come to be. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Valerie. To celebrate this exciting endeavor, and because I'm a little radio shy, I brought us a product of your hometown of Epernay, France.
Yeah, that sounds exciting.
So what was it like growing up in the champagne capital of the world?
Well, that's pretty nice, don't you think? It's like 20,000 people, very small city. But the magic is, and I realized that later on when I grew up, is you walk over hundreds of kilometers of cellars. I mean, underneath the city is just like holes everywhere. And you have millions of bottles of champagne in the cellars. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's incredible. Where are these cellars connected to?
I mean, you have different houses of champagne and they just share the ground. And outside of the city, you have all the vineyards. So it was pretty nice. And I was lucky because my high school was in the most, what we call the second most beautiful avenue in France, which is Avenue de Champagne, where you have some of the most famous houses of champagne with incredible buildings up to the 17th century and just evolve through the centuries. So it's beautiful surrounding.
It sounds like a gorgeous commute to high school.
Well, you do everything by walk because such a small city. You don't take any bus or cars or whatever. So it was nice.
And it's a bigger part of the economy, right? A lot of people are working in the champagne industry. Your father was not in the champagne industry. He made trailers.
Yes. So we are one of a few families who are not related to the champagne industry. My great-grandfather, then grandfather, were metal workers, and they had their small business. And my father took over and really developed to another scale. But I was in the industrial environment all my childhood.
The industrial environment?
Yes. Yeah.
How is that influenced your work now, because you make these beautiful interiors that look effortless and soft and feminine, but you grew up in a really industrial environment with your dad, who's an entrepreneur. So how has that influenced you today in your business?
Well, so getting back to the city of Epernay and the product of champagne, so you have a product that is extremely delicate, elegant, synonym of refinement, everything's magic. And then you go to your family business, which is very industrial, with really harsh and piece of steels and aluminum and nothing very appealing in terms of it's kind of a hard.
Not really aesthetically appealing.
No. But when you are a child and your father works so hard and during the weekends or in the evening after school, when everyone leaves and he still works in his office, this is your playground. And that was my playground. So you take your bike and you just run around the factory, and you have, few people staying there to finish their work. And you see someone's taking this big piece of steel and putting on a crane, and it's just like flying, dancing, in the air. And you say, oh, wow, that's funny, because it's this huge piece of metal can easily be turned into a contemporary sculpture. Of course, it's not the purpose of it, but it's
right. You saw the potential,
yes,
of raw materials.
And then further down in factory, you see someone welding, and the sparks, it's beautiful, the lights, and someone further down is going to make a hole, and you have all these little particle of metal flying on the ground. And I was like, oh, wow, it looks like, I'm a little girl,
Your imagination.
I was
wonder.
A tomboy, I really was enjoying to take with my hand all these aluminum aluminum particles on the ground, and just like, wow, that's so light and very shiny. And what can I do with that? So I just put that in my pocket, go home and just play with it. So that was my, my environment. And that was also my business school because, you know, when you have a family business, it's, you know, the family business comes home every day at the dining table, and you can learn about the ups and downs, you know, the customer relationship, the leadership, you know, everything that makes a business. And that was really my education. In another hand, that was, I would say that's my father's brand. And in another hand, I had my mother's brand, who is much more creative. A lot of reading, a lot of writing, calligraphy. I mean, much more artistic. And this is who I am today. You know, this is how I grew up, with two brands, two sides. And I had to figure out what I would do with that. So after high school, I really decided that I wanted to go more into the creative field.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, tell me about that. Tell me what gave you the confidence to really break into a more creative environment.
I think I just wanted to. I loved creating something with my hands. And I needed to have a pen, whether I was writing or whether I was drawing. It was just like a call. And Épernay is a small city very close to Paris, even closer today. I mean, you take the train. At my time, it was only 1 hour. So when I was young, I was lucky enough to be able to visit a lot of museum, see a lot of exhibition, yeah. Art exhibition. Mm-hmm. I loved so much any flea markets. That was
and so, how old are, fun. Yeah, what was it like? How old were you and what was it like to be in such a large city with so much to offer as a young girl?
Oh, I was lucky enough to have trusting parents.
Yeah.
And maybe we were living in another time. I don't know. I don't know if I would do the same with my daughter today at such an early age. But when I was 15, 16, 17, 3 years in a row, I decided that I wanted to, during the summer, you know, I wanted to attend some summer lectures at École du Louvre. So you know about the Museum of the Louvre, of course, but there is a beautiful school. It's all about art history, and they have weekly programs. So you can subscribe just for 1 week.
And is this in the Louvre, like what we all think of as the
yes.
Louvre?
It, yes,
there's
it
a
is.
School in there?
Yes, I mean, you know, it's so big, so just
right.
Take a little space for the school. And I loved it. I loved learning about art history, and I think it just... You know, your imagination can run very far when you listen about, okay, you can have a piece of furniture of this space, of this light fixture, of this vase. It's everything is related to a story behind. And I think it was fascinating and I just loved it. So I told myself, you know, you're a young adult and say, what am I going to do with my life? And say, well, I want to become an art dealer or antique dealer. And finally, when I grew up, I realized that I really wanted to do something with my hands. And I was lucky. If I was a dealer, it's the business part.
But so you weren't really having the, you were missing the process.
I was missing the process of building something. And I think it's coming from the fact that I saw in my childhood hardworking people, extremely skilled people. Without these people, the business, the family business would be nothing. And so we learn how to value their work. And it was just fascinating that with you take one piece of material, you ask them with something, and you just create a product. And I loved it. So I was really attracted by this creative part more mm-hmm. than the business part. So after high school, I applied to different schools, art school, and I got into very nice one, the École Camondo, which is a 5-year program for interior design and product design. And that was the beginning of my journey.
Yeah, so I feel like there's a little bit of a stigma here in the United States about art schools and what, you know, you really get out of art school. But it's something here in the atelier, you talk about that time a lot, that it was really important to you and your creative growth. What kind of skills and did you pick up from school?
First, I would say that, so it's a 5-year program, as I said, you learn how to work a lot. Because it doesn't look like it, but even when you go to art school, you need to work a lot. And the two first year were pretty amazing. And I think they still influence me today. The two first years are absolutely not related to what you will think you will learn into interior design or product design school. We don't know how to draw plans, elevation, techniques. We don't know codes. I mean, this is definitely not what you're learning. We're learning for 2 years how to be incredibly creative, push our creativity boundaries, explore, see what's behind this first vision that you have of an element, see how you can connect this thing with this thing. I mean, it's just like, you know, take every cell of your creativity and put it out there. And it was a life experience that I think still influenced me today.
Yeah. So what do you do if you just come into the atelier and you're just not feeling creative and you don't know where to go, you're in a real pickle, what do you do? What kind of exercises do you do to really
get your mind there? Yeah. So, I mean, the easiest things is everyone has a cell phone today, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I personally love to take pictures. And when I say take picture, is you can start with a cell phone, of course, but I love to take my camera with a micro lens. And you have a vision of something, a product, an element, piece of nature. You just take a first picture and then you go closer and closer. And there is another world when you use macro lens. And I think it's just fascinating. So the vision you have at first might be very different than what you can see further down and if you go a little bit deeper. So you have so many levels of inspiration. And it's, you know, we have beauty all around us. We're surrounded by beauty or by elements that are just attractive, that give you inspiration. You just have to look for it. That's why I never get bored because, I mean, just give me a phone, give me a camera. There's just a genesis of so many elements of inspiration. And I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem that having our phones with us, which now are essentially cameras, do allow us to see things from all new perspectives.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you graduated from school and you had all these incredible experiences and you have this great base. You get married and you have 4 beautiful children. And then you move here to America, to New Orleans. What was that like? I mean, moving is never easy. And I mean, moving for me from the Bywater to the Treme was a whole event. So I can't imagine moving from France to the United States was easy. Tell me about that.
Well, I was very excited, to be frank with you. I think it was, I think it's moving even a few kilometers, just like you mentioned, or just like thousands of kilometers is always exciting. Because again, we can see, you know, the world from a different angle.
The opportunities, yeah.
Yes. And I think it's just, I was very lucky. So moving in New Orleans in 2007, 2 years after Katrina, I have to be honest, people from France were thinking we were absolutely crazy because the media, the press, you know, were extremely hard on New Orleans.
Yeah, they were not kind during that time.
No, I mean, that was... And I'm talking about the French newspaper. I cannot talk about the American newspaper at the time. But it was really about why they didn't shut down the city. The crime rate is so high. What's the point? It's going to happen again, et cetera, et cetera. Extremely negative. And when I moved here, I mean, I felt at home. It was very, very, I mean, not only people were extremely welcoming, like nothing I've known in Europe. as the I learned it was the Southern hospitality. Mm-hmm. So it's very important when you move in a new country that you feel welcome. And also, I never felt insecure. It's just like every city, you have rules. You know, in Paris too, we know that by now, you have rules. But the scale of the city is just easy as well. So when you come with 4 children, it's just, you know, fantastic. You have also the French and Spanish background, history, and I think it was really helpful to just feel like home as well. And
there was a lot of, you felt familiar here because of the rich history and some of the culture.
Yeah, I think it was, I think, yeah. I
have and then to I'm say, sure the Southern hospitality.
I don't want to talk about other city that I know now in America, because I don't want to knock down any cities, but I feel like I'm so grateful that we ended up in New Orleans, because mm-hmm. it has characters, history, the culture is amazing, food is amazing. There is something really special about New Orleans. And I'm just so happy that now I can call it home. And I was able to call it home because I've been very, I've been welcomed here, and people make it easy on me. And I loved it, and on my family.
Yeah, what was that like? I mean, I think that I know you're such a social person. And I mean, anyone needs, when they're moving, to feel a connection to people and make friends. How did you really dive into that? Especially as an adult. I feel like as I've become more of an adult, it's not easy to make friends.
Well, food, believe me or not.
Ah, I will believe that.
Food was very helpful for me. When I say that is, so I'm in a new country, new city, didn't know anyone. I'm just cooking. And fantastic. People just knock at your door and say, hey, you're new in the neighborhood. Welcome in the neighborhood. And you open the door and say, thank you, you know. And then you say, oh, it smells so good here. What are you doing? And I say, well, I'm cooking. Oh, where are you from? I'm from France. I say, yeah, okay, I'm cooking because, you know, it's healthy for kids. It's tasty. I just love it. It's creative. And very spontaneously, people just come in my kitchen and say, open, you know, pots and look. And say, oh, my God, how you do that? I said, well, just fixing dinner, you know. And that's so funny because from this home cooking, this home cooking actually brought me a lot of friends.
Right,
just
yeah.
Because people, you know, I had ladies living around my house. Or
and when you
from
say
school.
Home cooking, you mean from like France?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Bringing it to your new home here in America.
Exactly.
Brought in.
And so I ladies that, you know, in my neighborhood or from school say, oh, I heard you cook very well. Can you just show me how to do that? And I say, sure, just come home. So first at the very beginning, I had one lady coming and she was watching me, you know, how I was cooking. And I say, well, why don't you bring your ingredient and we go together? And then you go home with your dinner and I just have my dinner and just I practice my English, you know, and we just know each other and I can teach you about French cooking. And then another friend came and then another one. And finally, I ended up doing like cooking class once a week, twice a week. And I already started a tiny bitty business here.
Yeah, you just stumbled upon this culinary school right in Old Metairie.
Yeah, but it was, I had my struggle. I'm just like any business. You have your ups and downs. And you. My struggle was finding the right ingredients because, you know, Valerie coming to New Orleans and finding some sour cream, thinking it was like creme fraiche. And then it's a catastrophe because you cannot cook with sour cream. I mean, just little detail. The way you guys cut your meat is different from us. So I was at Whole Foods, you know, with internet. And I was like looking at literally a cow. I was printing a cow. And I was like, okay, this piece of meat is this piece of meat. Just little adjustment, you know. Just it was funny.
Yeah, it's the little things. It's always the
little
things.
Thing. But
yeah.
Anyway, it was great because I was able to meet a lot of people this way and connect. And I love that.
Yeah, and so what were some of your favorite dishes that you would make?
Oh, we were making like a chicken with... mustard cream from Champagne. I mean, just, you know, little something tasty thing. But it was really good. We gratined off in a way with his cream and potato gratin. And, you know,
making my mouth water.
Yeah.
So, how did you get back into interior design specifically? And
well, so cooking was something I was enjoying, because when you move in a new country, you also have to, you depend on your visa. You have to be very patient and follow the rules. And so I could not work. And frankly, if I had to start doing interior design when I move in this country, I would have not known how to start. Because this is a total different animal than what we have in France. We don't build the same way. I didn't have a language. I mean, I still have a very
heavy accent. Our measuring tapes are even different.
But a measure tape, I mean, the way you measure is very different. Codes, everything is a different animal. And no connection. You know, where do you start when you don't know anyone in that field? So when I was cooking, I loved it. I developed my little business. And at some point, I felt like I was kind of turning into a cooking machine. And that was not my channel, was not my call. And I really wanted to go back to my field. So I felt that the safest way for everyone was to educate myself and be my own client. After Katrina, you know, well known that so many neighborhoods, so many houses needed to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. And I purchased a house to rehab. And this is how I learned. You know, finding a plumber, finding a painter, go to City Hall. What about permits? What about code? What about everything? And it took me some time to renovate this first house. But this is how I learned. And that, I think that was the best way. So this is how I just went back into my field. I did that for a couple of years on, you know, many different houses. But when you rehab houses to just put on a market, you have to be extremely conventional. You have to be, you know, very neutral.
You always have to be, what is the buyer?
Yeah, what is the buyer going to want? And then I was like, okay, now I get it. I know how to build. I know how to make things happen. I'm getting bored here. I need to push my creativity because I'm going to die. When I say that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was getting bored. So I needed more. So at some point I decided to push a little bit more, specifically one house, you know, more design, being more adventurous. And then I've been noticed by some local.
Well, specifically in that project, what did you do that wasn't the typical quote unquote Home Depot renovation? What did you do to really push that creativity?
Well, you know, you
what got you that attention?
Yes. So you have this house, the shotgun house.
Yep.
You
know, the classic New Orleans shotgun.
New Orleans shotgun. And then people like to open everything and have an open space. Mm-hmm. I like that. Don't make me wrong. But I think at some point, if you can have a tiny bitty piece of privacy and just, you know, separate the rooms and can have a versatility of a see-through, it's even better. I mean, I thought it was. And so when we got the house, and you have this, all the studs just standing up there.
Yeah, all the wood that's behind all the plaster and all the sheetrock and everything, that like grid of beautiful old wood.
Yes, mm-hmm. And then we remove all the slats, you know, and it's just like all these sticks flying, you know, floating in the air. And I look at it and you have a beautiful light coming in and we're talking about demo site, you know. And I'm like, God, that's beautiful. Just leave it like that. So we sheetrock the whole house and I decided that I wanted to leave the partition wall between the kitchen and the living room semi-open, just having this.
So you left just the literal studs.
Yes.
In between the kitchen and the living space. Which exactly. A lot of people at that time were just total open concept. But you, and that's that beautiful old New Orleans wood too. I mean, I've seen it, but it's gorgeous. Like, yeah, it's that beautiful New Orleans wood. And I saw it, so I think you deserve all the attention. And I thought it was brilliant.
I mean, so it was just very different. And you still have authenticity of a New Orleans home.
Did you feel nervous about it when?
No.
Did anyone look at you like you were crazy? What are you doing? No, you just knew it was the right.
You have to go with your guts.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just have to do. Which was funny is the shit rocker could not understand. Said, do not touch that wall.
Yeah.
And the shit rocker was like, she's crazy. I said, that's okay. You know? And so thanks to this house, I've been, you know, noticed in some local online newspaper, magazine, or whatever you call that. And that's put me on the spot a little bit. And I had my first request to work on project. And that's how I started. And my first big project, it was big for me at the time, you know, when you restart, you know, your life as a interior designer in a new country. I started with a beautiful restaurant, DTB, uptown. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough that this young fellow trusted me. And that was a beginning. And I said, well, you know, maybe I need to start to create a website. So late 2015 and early 2016, I just started having a website and saying, here I am. I'm, you know, I have my own business now.
The atelier is open. Atelier.
Yes.
So, of course, there's been a lot of growing pains and ups and downs with opening up your own business. But now here we are, and you have some beautiful projects under your belt and more projects than ever and diverse projects. So why start a podcast now?
I don't know. I feel like, I mean, I do know. you know, I feel like I grew up in a beautiful city, beautiful country. I was lucky to live in Paris for 8 years, learn so much, move in an incredible city. And I have my interior design business today, but I would be nothing without the people that helped me here and all the makers. When I say all the makers, is you can be creative, whether you're a fashion designer, whether you're an interior designer, whether you're a jewelry designer, you still need the makers. And I'm just fascinated by their work. Mm-hmm. And the creativity is not an island. We have some ideas, concepts, vision, but it's a teamwork. And I feel like that all the project that's surrounding us, or all the beauty that surrounds us, people need to understand that it's a teamwork, and there is so many people behind the curtains that are doing incredible works, and they need to, they deserve to be on you know, on the stage, on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, coming up with an idea is one thing, but making that idea a reality is another thing. So those, what are these steps in between? It's really important, yeah, to show those steps. And it seems like that's been a really important part of your mission.
Yeah. And I mean, really here in New Orleans, that's why I feel like very lucky to be in this very special city, is we have an incredible creative community. And I met them along the way. And so many talented, skilled, creative people. And I like to speak, in my podcast, not only about the creativity, but also the entrepreneurship part of it. Because you also, you know, all these people, they make a living about it, and you need to inspire the young generation, not only pass on the skills, the tradition, but it's a valuable business.
Right. So the actual craft is important in learning these invaluable skills that make our world so beautiful, but also you got to eat.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like it's important to understand that if, when you have skills, when you have value in your hands or value in your creative mind, you can turn that into a passion, and your passion can turn into a business. Right. And that's very important. And it's a teamwork. And if we, as a creative community, share our connection, ideas, then everyone's going to benefit from it.
Right. Collaboration. And
absolutely.
Bringing true skills. And I think that it's very French of you, because the French really value niche craftsmanship and skills, and fostered that for hundreds of years. They spoke a lot about that when Notre Dame.
Absolutely. That was what I wanted to mention. You're right. We have a system in France when you are 14 years old or 15 years old, you can decide to not really quit high school, but take a different orientation. And you can decide that you want to really go on a craft trade school. And it's very important, because we need You know, we need people who know how to. I mean, that was a perfect example with a tragedy in Notre Dame. We miss so many talented craftsmen, mastercraft, artisan. And I think it's a tragedy, and that we need to react and value, you know, the beauty of our work.
And do it before it's gone.
Do it before it's gone.
Because I think that was a major lesson of Notre Dame, was where it was so upsetting to watch it, you know, live from our computers here in New Orleans, but kind of knowing how difficult it is to rebuild something like that. And so it's almost, we take it for granted until it's gone. And yeah, highlighting these craftsmen and master fabricators and things is very important, because we need to, if you don't value it, then it won't continue.
Yeah. And also I want to, you know, when I'm going to interview people, I really want to point out that we're talking about craftsmen, mastercraft, artisan. You know, maybe in people's mind, it's about tradition. Yes, it is. But there is the new technology today, like the CNC, the 3D printing. I learned recently about a 4D printing, which I'm not exactly know what it is. But this is the future associated with traditional skills. This is who we are today and where we're going to go tomorrow.
It's all about, yeah, innovation.
Innovation. And us, you know, people like us, you know, the creative minds, we need to partner with all these people and learn from others. So during the podcast, I'm going to interview a brand maker, a perfume maker, a ceramic artist, you know, jewelry artist, a jewelry designer, a perfume designer. I mean, there is so many creative minds all around us that let's just share and just see, you know, learn about their story, how they live and lead a creative life. And I think it's fascinating. I mean, to me it is. So that's why I'm starting this podcast.
Well, I think it's fascinating as well. And I can't wait to take a peek behind the creative, well-tailored curtain.
Yeah. And you want to learn about how they work, how they, what is their world, and how they made it happen.
Absolutely. Well, I can't wait to download it where I get my podcasts, and I invite you to do the same thing, to please download and subscribe and listen along.
Yes. I don't know if we talk about the name of the podcast.
Oh, so, yes. So the circle back now.
So the name of the podcast is Textures.
Textures. How'd you come up with that name?
I was circling back to, let's circle back to the slowing down, you know, using my macro lens and just get closer and closer and closer and see the true textures of an element, the layers, the pattern. And I think it's fascinating. And thinking about it, I was like, wait a minute, all these people around us and are so creative, they add textures to our world, to our life. And that's how I just found the name.
Well, I agree, and I think it sounds very fascinating, and I cannot wait to download it and subscribe to the podcast where I get my,
you know, favorite platforms.
Yeah, my favorite platform, which is the little podcast app on my iPhone. And yeah, I can't wait for the season, and ching ching.
Ching ching, but I want to finish with something, Margaret.
Yes.
You can also find all the information of the podcast on the website at valerielegras.com/podcast. And of course, we're creating an Instagram page. So, merci beaucoup. À bientôt. Chin chin.
Au revoir.
Bye.